Life Audio.
You are listening to The Becca Cook Show with your host, Becca Cook. For more information about Beckett and his ministry, visit his website at beckettcook.com. To help support the podcast, visit patreon.com/The Becca Cook Show. Please consider subscribing to the podcast and leaving a 5-star rating.
Hey guys, welcome to the show. Today I have a special guest, my dear friend Tom Nearing. Tom and I met a week after I got saved in 2009 at my church. He used to go to my church. He and his family live in San Luis Obispo area. But Tom, the second week I was at church, at the weekend after I got saved, I was at the service. And then afterwards, I was like, I need a Bible. And so I went to the book table and there were, you know, a lot of books and Bibles. And I said, could I get one of these Bibles? It was this Bible. And it's an ESV translation. And at that time, this was 2009, and they didn't have like a swipe thing. It was cash only. Remember that? Remember what cash was? Anyway, so I didn't have cash on me, and I was like, oh, I don't have cash. I'm sorry. And it was $5. And immediately when I said, I don't have cash, this guy, his arm comes under me and hands a $5 bill to the woman at the table. And I was like, what? And it was my friend Tom Nearing. And so Tom Nearing bought me my first Bible. I don't use it anymore because, as you can see, the print is so tiny, I can't see it anymore. So, because it's 15 years later. So now I have a larger print Bible. And, but anyway, Tom is going to tell us, I want to talk to Tom about his story of how he came to faith in Christ. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Please welcome Tom Nearing.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Beckett. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm glad you're here. So, okay. I talked about you buying my first Bible, which I love. I love this Bible because, well, it's fallen apart but I've like taped it up and I think I want to get it because I can't read it anymore because it's too, I mean, it's weird how Bible makers think that people can read that small of print. But I think I'm just going to frame it and like have it for the rest of my life. Like,
I love that idea. Look at it. It looks so well loved. I love it.
I know. It's like my first real Bible. It's amazing.
Wow.
So, okay. I want to get into your story, how you came to faith in Christ. Let's start with, you know, you're from Alabama, right?
Alabama. Mm-hmm.
Is it Birmingham?
Yeah, that's where I went to high school, Birmingham.
And so when you were a child, did you grow up in a Christian family?
Yep. Born and raised in the church, went to private Christian school pretty much every year except for one through, you know, till I went to college.
And then, so when you were a kid, I mean, did you believe all the stuff? Did you believe that Jesus?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, when I was five or six, my dad was kind of talking to me about heaven and hell and then was like, you know, if you don't believe in Jesus, you go to hell. And he's like leaving the room. And I'm like, excuse me, one second. Let's go ahead and say that prayer.
You know. So you were so 5 years old? I,
huh?
You were five?
Yeah, I think I was about five. I was living in Daphne, Alabama at the time. And yeah, I remember it very vividly, and saying the prayer and to receive the Lord in my heart. And yeah, I just always believed growing up. So.
Wow. And how many, did you have siblings? Do you have siblings?
Yes. I was the oldest of four.
And did they all eventually, did they all come to Christ as well?
They are, they all have very different walks. We have a very interesting family story, fairly tumultuous. And my younger siblings are, especially the middle two, I would say, are sorry, guys, if you see this, Katie or Charlie, but I, you know, you guys are have had a hard life, and love you guys, but they're finding their way. I text with my brother often, and he's kind of like, what do I need to do? And I've told you, Charlie, you just got to quit drinking. And that's the first step, you know, and he doesn't want to quit drinking. But so they're kind of all over the place. My parents actually came back to the Lord after I did. And I ended up baptizing them at Matt or yeah, Matt Chandler. No, not Matt Chandler. Who am I trying to say? David Platt. David Platt's church.
Okay. Where's his church?
He had a church at the time. He had a church in Birmingham.
Oh, right. Okay.
He has his own ministry now. I don't think he works at a church right now, but.
And then when you were young, I think around the same age I was when this happened, you were molested. And I want to see how that affected you and affected even your faith. So what, tell us about that.
Yeah. So the interesting part of that is, I think I was probably like 8 or 9. Funny enough, I actually put it out of my mind, I guess, because it wasn't until I was 18 or 19, I heard a story about a young girl who started going through all these health complications, and they couldn't figure out what was going on. But in the hospital, she was telling her doctor and her parents about these visions she was having of being like raped in a field. And as soon as she started to confess that, and it came to light that those weren't just like some random vision, that this was like a memory of something that she had when she was young, all of her symptoms started going away, and she got better, and they were able to process through it. But I just, at the time of hearing that, I was like, man, how weird would that be to be just like a high school kid or whatever, and then all of a sudden you have this dramatic memory of something that happened, and you just didn't even remember it. And then while I was thinking that thought, I was sitting there going, well, that could be me. I mean, if it happened to me and I haven't remembered, I guess. And then as I'm thinking about that, it all like came back to me, and I was like, holy crap, that did happen to me. And like, I hadn't even thought about it or remembered it at all. Wow. So in the moment of remembering, I thought at the time, I guess this is one of those, you know, like Vietnam War vet stories you just never tell anyone. And that you just go to your grave. Cause I was, you know, I was like, I'm never telling that to anyone, but, that's kind of how that was, the process of remembering it. And at that time I was, had graduated high school and was going off to college. And then that's a whole nother story. So I would say my faith was very cultural at that point. If that makes sense.
Did that experience affect your faith, or do you not
remember because that? It was so much later in remembering it, and because it was such a cultural faith, I wouldn't say I was walking with the Lord and full of the Holy Spirit or anything like that. I was just kind of like, you know, I'd attend youth group and Bible studies and lead freshman stuff or whatever. It was all very cultural. So remembering it, you know, there was a couple years later where a friend of mine was telling me about going to a psychologist for a porn addiction and how it had really helped him. And I thought, I should probably go tell someone about this incident, because I don't want it to, like, I don't want it years down the road, it be some like overwhelming memory that I can't deal with. So, I guess I was trying to plan ahead or something, but I went and told the psychologist about it, and kind of processed it with him. But I'll just say, like, I ended up giving my life to the Lord years later, maybe a decade later. And so I could talk more about the difference there. But like once I started walking with the Lord and received the Holy Spirit, he dramatically changed my perspective of the whole thing.
So. And you actually, later in life, I don't know when this was, you actually contacted the person and apologized to him?
Yeah, well, so interestingly enough, after I got saved, I thought about him and I thought, you know, I wonder if he's struggling with like these memories or these thoughts or the fact that this happened. And so I wrote him a letter and just saying like, hey, just so you know, I remember this. I was a brand new Christian at the time. And I was just like, hey, just want you to know that like I totally forgive you and all this kind of stuff. And then he got mad at me because he said, what if somebody found the letter, you know, ruined his life or whatever. And I was like, oh, sorry.
We'll be right back after this short break.
So that was my initial contact after I got saved. But years later, I started suffering from these panic attacks, just kind of randomly. And I was actually working in Skid Row at the time. So I thought maybe it was associated with like just being in that environment. And it was praying like, God, you know, what is this? Like, this is so weird. Why am I having these? And then he gave me Psalm 25:15, which says, my eyes are ever on the Lord, for only he will set my foot free from the snare. And I just filled me with so much hope because I knew God was going to like just lift the panic attacks whenever he was ready. And then next day I met a missionary guy who told me these stories of missionaries who would go onto the mission field and come back and start having like headaches or anxiety or like all these different things. And then they would, as they began to seek counsel, it would come out that they had been molested or there was some trauma, there was something in their life that they had never dealt with. And so as they began to deal with it, they would like their symptoms would go away. And I'm sitting there like, I'd just gotten back from Haiti recently. And like, I'd started having these panic attacks. I'd been molested. I thought I had worked through that. And so I'm like talking to him, or he's telling me these stories in my jaw and just dropping like, this is like my story, you know? So I told him, and he's like, well, have you forgiven this person? And I was like, yeah. And I told him about writing the letter to him and all this stuff. And he said, well, have you really forgiven him? And I said, okay, well, let me think about this. And I thought about it. And so at that point I was married and I had told my wife and I told several other people. And I was thinking about whenever the people who knew the story, whenever they talked fondly of this person or they were nice about this person, I would kind of like internally be like, they know the story. Why are they favoring this person? Why are they being, you know, nice or whatever? And so I said, you know what? I think there is some unforgiveness there. He said, and it just so happened, Beckett, this is kind of crazy, but I met this guy and the next day I was scheduled, like, because it was like the holidays or whatever, I was just going to happen to see this person. Yeah. Right before this missionary told me the story. So he's like, I'm like, yeah, maybe I haven't forgiven him. And he's like, well, when are you going to see him next? And I was like, tomorrow night. And so he's like, you need to go and apologize for unforgiveness. And I was like, and I just knew because God had given me that verse the day before, like that this was God being like, this is your path. Like, this is what I have for you to do. And so, yeah, we were, saw him the next night and was just like, well, I'll tell that part later. Anyway, I said, hey, just want to say like, you know, I wrote you that letter. We haven't really talked much in the last several years, but I just want to confess, like, I've had unforgiveness towards you, and that's not how God wants me to feel about you at all. And he's forgiven me of like everything that I've ever done and ever will do. And so, you know, I just want to say I'm sorry, whatever. And then they, you know, had this really gracious response, and it was just like, wow, it was amazing. But then as soon as I left and went away, like the enemy was just all over me and was like, what? How could you be the one apologizing to them? They should be apologizing to you and like all this stuff. And it was heavy. It wasn't just like these thoughts. It was like heavy condemnation. And I was like, oh. So I went to that missionary guy the next day and was like, look, I'm struggling with these thoughts. And one of the gracious ways in which this person responded was, you know, hey, I've known you for a long time, you know, it's been great to like see you at various different events and this and that and the other. And we've been great about, you know, getting together, you know, our families and stuff. But one thing that we're not great at is saying we're sorry and talking about real stuff. And so my missionary friend said, well, did you hear what he said? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, he said, he meant I don't know how to say, talk about real stuff. And I don't know how to say, I'm sorry. And so in that moment, like, it was just all that condemnation of like, you know, he should have said he was sorry and all that stuff. He's like, he did it. You know, you had to kind of read between the lines, but so it just broke. And then the missionary friend, his name was Paul, by the way, he said, go and talk to the Lord about like anybody else. He's like, you've dealt with like a base level of bitterness or unforgiveness in your life. Now go ask God if there's anything else. Like if there's a house that's been built in your heart of unforgiveness, go ask him if there's anybody else in that structure that you need to go talk to. And he gave me like five or six names, and I went and talked to each one of them. And it was like insanely powerful. Like it was so just life-giving. The last one that I did, it felt like I got saved all over again. I mean, it was like the most joyous, happiest day that I can, you know, in my entire life, one of the most joyous, happiest days. But what one thing I wanted to say is every single person, including the first one, like I would be in the setting, like, you know, I was there with the person that night, and I had to talk myself into the conversation for like 2 hours. You know, it was like, oh, I'm not going to, maybe this isn't the right time. And it's like, you haven't seen this person in 5 years or something like that. Who knows when you're going to see him again? Like, you're here. God gave you the verse. God gave you the person. Like, why are you going to put this off? You have to go talk to him. But I'd be trying to talk myself out of it. And then the next four or five people that I talked to, it was the same. Like, I was just arguing with myself, like back and forth and back and forth, trying to like talk myself out of apologizing. But, you know, by the grace of God, I was able to apologize every time, and every single time I was just blown away. Because I was, one of the reasons I was fearful, in a couple instances, I actually had tried to apologize to some of these people, but I had this expectation of their response. Like, are they going to not only receive my apology, but then reciprocate and be like, oh, you know what? I'm really sorry too. Mm-hmm. But this time, it didn't feel like manipulative in any way. Like I wasn't trying to solicit a response from them at all. It just felt like God said, go do this. And I was just being obedient to God. And it was just between me and God, you know? And so their response didn't matter. But thankfully, and by his grace, like every time I did it, their response was like overwhelmingly like, whoa, that was really gracious.
Wow. Anyway,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in so many contexts, and you know, at church when people have prayed for me, and I've forgiven the man who molested me, but I don't know if I really have. I can't tell. I mean, I've said out loud, God, I forgive this man. I forgive, you know, blah blah blah, and. I mean, he's dead now, so there's no way for me to talk to him.
Yeah.
Contact him. I actually tried to contact him, but so it's a weird thing because I haven't had that kind of moment of just feeling completely unensnared, I guess, by that. By that experience. And I don't know how many more times I have to say I forgive this man before that happens.
But, yeah, I think it's definitely a process. I mean, there's definitely been times even since then that like I have to remind myself and tell myself that they're forgiven. And even today, it's like I have three boys, you know, 8, 5, and 2. And I find that it's like life-giving to say out loud, like, God, I forgive them, because I want to like, you know, rip their heads off half the time, because it's just like if you've been a dad or been a parent at any time dealing with young kids or teenagers, like it's really hard. And so I've found that at times when I've asked them to brush their teeth for the 20th time and I want to like pull my hair out, that I just say like, Lord, forgive them. And I can just examine this impact inside my heart, you know, and body. So I think it's a constant process. You know, there's still people in my life that I find it's difficult to let go of hurts, you know. But it's so life-giving when you do. And I would say too, it goes from like just completely letting them off the hook to like moving into a place where you're like praying blessing over their life. And you like genuinely want, you know, like even for this gentleman that you're talking about, like blessing for his family. And I don't know, you could get baptized on his behalf if you want, like that passage, you know, and Paul's talking about resurrection from the dead. And he's like, well, if people don't rise from the dead, then why do people get baptized on behalf of the dead? I don't know. It's a weird, obscure passage, but yeah. Anyway.
And so,
yeah, lots of different ways that I guess.
Yeah, that's good. I even saw a counselor about this, you know, for like a year recently and tried to work through it. And I don't know. Anyway, I'm not sure where I am on this whole thing, but
yeah,
I'll keep working on it with God. But okay. So then after college, for God knows what reason you decide to move to Los Angeles. I don't know why, what possessed you to do that, but why did you move to LA?
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. When I was a kid, this is, I'm gonna throw myself under the bus a little bit here, but I remember being over at a friend's house playing video games. And I read an article about Leonardo DiCaprio. And he said he wanted to be an actor so that girls would see him. And being a young person, I was like, oh yeah, that's what I want. I want to be noticed, you know, I want to be seen. And so I always had this like thing in the back of my head, like I'd love to move to LA one day and give acting a shot or something like that. But fast forward many years later, graduated from college, and I had my last year of college, I got to be on an Animal Planet show, which was really fun. But I got to meet some producers, and they like highly encouraged me to move to LA. So the summer after I graduated, I spent in Australia. And so on the way back to Alabama from there, I planned a week layover basically in Los Angeles. And I was going to visit some college friends that were there. And at this point, this is a whole nother story, but I ended up losing my virginity in college, which led to like 7 years of like sex, drugs, and rock and roll, whatever. And so when I stopped over in LA, I was staying with friends that were like Christians, and they were like talking about all the stuff that God had done in their life that summer. And so I was kind of like, huh, all right, well, so the day before I went back to Alabama, I said this prayer. I said, God, if you want me to move to LA to get in touch with me, because I don't even feel like I deserve to talk to you right now. Like I've just spent the whole summer partying and I don't have a relationship, no prayer life, no devotional. Like I just wasn't living for the Lord at all. It was a moment where it was like a prayer of faith where I knew God was going to answer it in one way or another. Like if it was a no, it was going to be really, really clear. And if it was a yes, it was going to be really, really clear. And so I was praying that prayer as I got ready that morning, and literally 45 minutes later, somebody gave me a car. And then by the end of the day, I had a car, a job, and a place to stay in Los Angeles. And so I took that as a yes.
That's crazy. And,
yeah.
And what year was that?
That was 05, August of 05.
And so, and when you started living here, how was your walk then after you moved here?
Yeah, well, I hadn't even really started to walk, and I didn't necessarily commit my life to the Lord in that moment. It was just this prayer of like, if you want to get in touch with me, that's literally what I said. And so I moved out, and I was kind of hanging out with the people that I knew from back home, or the friends of their friends, so friends of friends. And they were kind of like very Hollywood Christians. And to this day, like I have a hard time, you know, like, I don't know, I guess I'm being too judgmental and whatever, that's my own issue. But I was very quickly like, I don't like this crowd. And so I went back to my partying friends. So I had some other friends move out a couple months later. So I moved in with them. So then my partying phase lasted a couple more years. And then I was kind of like, I'd been there, I'd done lots of different jobs. I'd, you know, I was in kind of the party Hollywood scene that some of the friends that I was hanging out with at the time are fairly famous now. Scoot McNeary is one of those guys.
I was friends with Scoot. Yeah, that's so funny.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So
and Johnny Wujek was his best friend.
Okay.
I don't know if you know Johnny.
he's a musician though, right? Or is he an actor too?
He's Katy Perry. Well, he was Katy Perry's stylist.
Okay.
Wardrobe.
There were several guys like Dawes, the band, and there was like a lot of crossover musician actor like in that whole scene circle. Adam Nee was another guy. He's like a movie director now. He did Lost City, whatever. Anyway, so those guys were just cooler and more fun and whatever. So I hung out with them for a couple more years, but threw myself under the bus again, smoked a lot of weed in those 2 years and just kind of got to this point where I was like, Lord, what am I doing here in LA? Like, why did you move me here? And I just remember having this sort of like loving response of like, yeah, what was the prayer again? It was like to get in touch with me. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, yeah, I haven't really been paying attention to you that much. And so I made a decision there that I was going to go back to a Bible study, the one that I wasn't a big fan of. And the first night that I went, the point of the message was like, you're looking for blessings from God, but you're living in sin. How can you expect him to like bless you in any way? You know, it's like that.
What Bible study was this? How did you just find a random Bible study?
It was the same one that I wasn't really that big of a fan of. I'd gone to before. And it was funny too, because the first person that I saw when I went to the Bible study, like walked up and was like,
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Prodigal son returns, huh? And I'm like, screw you, dude. But I'm like, but at the time, actually, inwardly, I responded really graciously, which was, to me, it was a bit of a miracle that I would even, because I was like, I told myself, he doesn't know. He doesn't actually know that you've been out partying for the last 2 years. He just hasn't seen you in a while. So that's how I ended up coming back to the Lord. And then it was a series of about 3 weeks where I went to Bible study every week and made a decision like, I'm not going to go back. And gosh, there's so many testimonies around that time. I actually didn't want to go every single week. I was like telling myself I was not going to go, but I ended up going anyway. And I think it was the influence of this book called Write, which is about writer's block. This is a secular book. And it talks about how writers will often feel like they need to be in their, you know, winter cottage with snow outside and their bearskin rug and their pen, and everything needs to be perfect for them to be in the right mindset to be able to like write their whatever it is, screenplay, novel or whatever. And it's like, but the reality is all you need is a pen and a piece of paper, you know? And so then it goes through all these different exercises throughout the book. And so I think that really had an influence on me, because I was afraid that I wasn't going to be able to be a Christian. You know, I thought I'm going to have to go to tons of counseling. I'm going to have to take antidepressants. I'm going to get on psych meds because I've been, you know, in this world and I just felt like such a mess. I thought I was going to have to jump through all these hoops. And I was really afraid that if I tried to be a Christian, I wasn't going to be able to do it. And I was going to fall into sin and it was going to be devastating. We didn't talk about this much, but when I lost my virginity in college, I was like going to Bible studies and trying to, I'm a firstborn. So I was going to keep my nose clean. I mean, you know, partying was definitely not part of my plan in life. But when I lost my virginity, I just felt like, well, I'm stained now. Like, what's the point of upholding my integrity? So I was really afraid that if I tried to like keep my nose clean again and live a good life, that I wasn't going to be able to do it. And I didn't want to be disappointed in that way. So even that, the third night that I went to Bible study, one of the teachers was like, hey, I just feel like the Spirit's saying, if anybody wants to get healed tonight, like if anybody needs healing for anything, you've got a bad back, a bad knee, bad foot, something, anything, just come up and ask for healing. And we just want to anoint you with oil and just pray healing over you. And I was like, I feel like I got a huge chemical imbalance, you know, I need healing for that. So I went forward and, they anointed my head with oil and said, you know, God's a wonderful chemist, and just prayed this prayer over me. And dude, I've like always struggled with depression. I was on Wellbutrin as a kid, like on Adderall and like all these other kinds of things, struggled with suicidal thoughts. And like from that night till today, like I've been a completely different person. So God totally healed me, which was really cool. And then there's so many other testimonies. One thing that I was scared of was falling again in sexual sin. Because I just didn't think that I'd be able to recover that. So I prayed, you know, kind of around that time, like, God, please don't ever let that happen to me. And then like a few years down the road, I actually did. And I don't know if you knew this. This was like we were at Reality together at the time, and I was like serving in a prayer ministry and serving in all these places. And completely, you know, I was just being, you know, pride comes before the fall. And I went out drinking with work friends one night, and it was like telling my testimony, you know, to all these like heathens or whatever, just talking about the Lord. And we were walking from bar to bar, and I'd stop and pray with homeless people and all this other stuff. And then just kept, you know, going the rest of the night, drinking and talking. And the night ended with me and like this girl, and I was telling her all about Jesus. And then, you know, ended up falling and sleeping with her. And so the next morning, I was just like, what the heck? I was like, how did that? I couldn't. I was just weird. It was like disorienting, but it was really cool now to look back on, because like the first time that happened with me, you know, it wasn't my plan either. Like when I lost my virginity, I wasn't like seeking to get laid or like or sleep around or any of that stuff. But it just happened basically because I was being naive. And it devastated me. Well, this time, like I had to step down from everything that I was doing, and I had to tell my roommates, and I had to tell like all these people about what had happened, but it didn't devastate me. I was just like, I knew that I was loved. I mean, there were some months and maybe a couple years after where I had to wrestle, you know, with feeling valuable again and that kind of stuff, but it didn't devastate me like I was afraid that it would. And it ended up becoming kind of a testimony in and of itself. But yeah, so.
Did you, speaking of, because you were talking about the depression thing, you know the story, right? About Nick Tortorici praying for me
Yes, yeah.
at church. So, if any, I'll just repeat it quickly if anyone doesn't know the story. But so the same thing happened with me. I struggled with depression my whole, I think since high school. That's when, I think after I went through puberty, like that's when the depression kind of set in. Maybe before, I'm not sure. But anyway, so I dealt with it. You know, it was kind of like it wasn't severe, but it was definitely there, and especially in the mornings. And it was weird. I was going to a shrink back in the day, and I would tell him like it feels like when I wake up in the morning, I'm in this like hole. And basically, it takes me the entire day, and then by evening, I feel amazing. Like I crawl out of the hole up the mountain, like you know, a Runyon Canyon or whatever, and I feel good again. I feel great. So it was every single day was like that. But then, so eventually, before I was a Christian, like probably, oh gosh, when was this? Probably like. I don't know, 5 years before I was a Christian, I got on Wellbutrin and it totally knocked the depression out immediately. It was crazy. I was like, what? Like, this is insane. I can't believe I don't feel this anymore. So then I get saved at Reality, our church, your former church, my current church still. And so I go up to one of the elders, Nick, and after the service, and I tell him the story, and I ask him to pray for me, and he anoints me with oil, and he's praying for me and praying for God to heal the depression, and it was just the craziest thing ever. I mean, it was like I felt this thing. It was like this tingling feeling coming out of my body, up through my body, out of my head. And when that happened, I just like burst into tears, and I knew in that moment, I knew that I was healed. And it was crazy because Nick, you know, finally finished his prayer and opened his eyes, and I was like, Nick, I think I'm healed. And he said, yeah, he said, I remember exactly what he said. He said, yeah, I could feel the Holy Spirit moving in you. It's like, wow, like that was crazy. So yeah, God can do anything, which is amazing. Okay. So then when did you start going to reality? What year was that?
That was 08. Yeah.
June of 08. And when you got to Reality LA, were you, how did you feel about the church? Did you, I mean, did you love it? Was it too Hollywoodish for you, or like,
yeah, no, it's funny.
It was so, kind of hot, like back in the day, it was kind of a little bit Hollywoodish, but yeah.
I think, yeah, it kind of went that way. Maybe, I don't know. When I got there, we were still at the middle school. I think it was like 300 or 400 people. So it wasn't like crazy. But I had, so I was working in Malibu, you know, right before this at RRL in the Malibu Country Marts.
Yeah.
And there was like this surfer kid that came in and he was talking about this church in Hollywood that has like this tatted up preacher. And he's like, they just preach the Bible. It's just straight. There's no frills. And I had visited, sorry, I don't want to disparage other churches in LA. There's so many great places you can go. So I guess maybe I won't say the names, but there's a few others that I visited that I was just kind of like, uh-uh. But this one, when the surfer kid described it, I was like, that sounds authentic. That sounds real. That's if I ever come back, I remember thinking this, if I ever go back to the Lord, I'm going to check that church out. So then a couple months later, was when I first went back to Bible study. And so I think I went to Bible study 3 weeks in a row. And then I was like, somehow I Googled it. I don't know if I put church in Hollywood or I don't know what it was, but found reality and went. And I was like, oh, this is definitely the church. It was like, you know, the beat up old middle school and just no frills at all. And Tim, you know, was definitely tatted up and all that stuff. So then I was going there for like a month. And the last time I was still kind of like struggling to like get back and whatever. Between every week that I went to Bible study, I was like, all right, I'm going to do this. This is going to be great. And then I would like fall, like, cause I was still living with my old roommates and all my old friends were the same. And so I'd like, I'd go out and, you know, 3 or 4 days after Bible study, I'd go out. I'd be like, I'm just going to go out with them. I'm just going to have a beer. I'm just going to take a little bit of, you know, take a hit or whatever. And I just fully fall back in. And then I'd be really depressed. Like, oh, I knew I couldn't do it. I'm just not going to go back, you know? And then I ended up going back. And so that was 3 consecutive weeks. To where the final one was, some friends of mine at the time got into like the MTV Movie Awards. So they had like this room at the Roosevelt and like all this other kind of stuff. So I was like, oh, it's like, I can't miss this. This is too fun. It's too cool. And, so like I went to a party with them, obviously had a wild night, and the next morning was that was Saturday. And the next morning was Sunday. I was completely hungover. And I think church service was maybe at like 10 or whatever time it was at the time. And I woke up at like 9:30 and I was like really just discouraged. Cause I was like, ugh. And so I kind of fought with myself for 10 or 15 minutes. And then just decided, like, I'm going to go. I was unshowered. Like, I brushed my teeth. But, of course, you could still smell the alcohol and stuff. And I was just like, I don't care. I'm taking my mess to church. And I went, sat at the very, very back. I was just going to sit at the back and slip out. But they talked about getting baptized that week. And I was like, I'm doing it. So then I think it was the next week or maybe a couple weeks later, got baptized in the back of – in Nick Todorici's pool, actually – with him and Tim
nice.
And man, whoo, that set my life on fire. Like the next 2 years were just like crazy. So many testimonies. God, this, we did a missions trip in London that was like next, I mean, it was just crazy. Like all the stuff that God did.
Was I on that trip with you? Cause I went to, I think that was on the second London trip.
It might've been. Yeah. Cause this was 2009, I think.
Yeah, I was in 2010, and your wife, before you weren't married at the time, but she was, Rebecca was the leader of our group on that trip. So I guess you weren't there.
And the second one, I don't think I was.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
When did you move out of LA? So you were at Reality for how many years?
See, 08, we got married in 12, 13, I think. 6 years, 5 or 6 years. And then we left, I want to say 2013 or 14. I want to say 2013. It gets foggy. But let's see, if I was in I think I was in LA for just under 10 years. So maybe it was 2014. Yeah, that'd be 6 years.
And I don't think I've ever, I mean, it's probably because you had a family, you were having a family, but why did you move from LA to what's it called? What does everyone call that area? What's it called? Like central?
Oh, well, it's Alturas is the town and Modoc County is the county.
But isn't it called like Central California or something? Anyway.
Oh, no. This is north. This is all the way north. This is as far north, right under the Oregon border.
Oh.
It's the largest county in California by landmass.
Oh, right. You moved. Okay. I remember this. Yeah.
And it's least populated any county. In fact, it's the last county without a traffic light. It's the only county in California without a traffic light. We were in the middle of nowhere, 15 miles to the closest town. Largest store in that town was like a Walgreens. We ended up giving birth to our firstborn son. We had to drive an hour and a half to the hospital.
Wow.
And so it was just in the middle of nowhere, and it was really, really hard season, but really, really fun also, kind of at the same time. I was just having a ton of fun running chainsaws and riding horses and all that kind of stuff. But they were not stoked. There was a lot of hard cultural things, like, cause I'm some kid from LA and they're born and raised up there and, you know, South people. But anyway, so God called us up there, and it's another long story or testimony, but essentially, went on a ski trip with a friend of a friend, an acquaintance I'd met a few times. And we just really connected on that ski trip. And then, he was telling me about this, his granddad's ranch up in Northern California, and he and his new bride were going to move up there and just kind of learn how to run a ranch and live off the land. And it was 100,000 acre ranch, like 30,000 irrigated acres. So sprinklers on 30,000 acres, basically. Very, very large. And I just thought, wow, what a fun opportunity. That sounds so cool. And I came home from the trip. And I told Rebecca, I was like, wouldn't that be so cool if like we just got to like run off and like live on a ranch for a little while and learn how to run a ranch and all that kind of stuff. And she was like, yeah, that would be really cool. But like, how's that ever going to happen? I'm like, I don't know. It's probably not. But I'm just saying, wouldn't it be cool? And then like a week later, my friend called me and it's like, hey, let's go get dinner. I'm like, all right. So we went and got dinner. We were hanging out. And at the end, he's like, hey, so anyway, I wanted to hang out with you, but I also wanted to ask you a big question. And my heart immediately jumped and I was like, he's not about to ask us to move up there. This is crazy. And he was like, what would you and Rebecca think about moving up with us? Maybe you would pray about it. And immediately I was like, I just wanted to say yes. I was like, let's do this, you know? And, but I was like, Rebecca, I don't know if she's going to be stoked on this idea. And so I said, let's have a dinner with the four of us, you and your wife and me and Rebecca, and let's let her meet you guys and get to know you guys, cause you guys are so great. And then I'll ask her. And he said, okay, that sounds like a good idea. So we planned to have dinner with the four of us like a week out. And then, part of the story behind his granddad's ranch was his granddad had found the ranch, after like some huge insurance company like had dug all these cisterns and wells and kind of irrigated the whole thing and had like kind of set up the whole property, and then was like, we want out. And so he got it for a great deal. So like, and there's just houses all over, you know, there's like all these ranchitas in the ranch, you know, so there's just, you know, houses for people to live in. I don't know, it's kind of crazy. And so as I'm waiting to have this dinner with the couple, God like keeps, I don't know if you've ever had this, like where God like won't let you sleep and you're just like, I don't really want to talk right now. I just want to sleep. But I was having one of those nights where I just felt like God was like, just like, excuse me. I need to talk to you. And I was like, oh, and so I tossed and turned for like 3 or 4 hours and finally got up and I felt like he was just like, read your Bible. And I was like, well, yeah, what book should I read? And I felt like in my spirit, he said, what book do you like? And I've always loved Deuteronomy and just have an affinity for it. And so I was like, Deuteronomy. He's like, read Deuteronomy. I was like, okay. So I'm reading Deuteronomy. It's like 3 a.m. I get to chapter 6, and God is like taking Israel through all these, he's taking them through the wilderness, and they've defeated all these kings. He's defeated all these battles for them. And then he's talking about taking them into the promised land. And he's like, I'm going to take you to the promised land, and I'm going to give you houses that you didn't build, wells that you didn't dig, cisterns that you didn't dig, you know, like vineyards that you didn't plant, you know, all these crops. And it was just like, he was like, you're going to the ranch is what I felt like. It just like the spirit fell on me. This is what I have for you in the season. And I just like wept for like 45 minutes, not even because I was excited to go to the ranch, but like, I don't know if you know anything about that season, but reality at this point had grown really big, and they were like trying to figure out how to do things, trying to figure out how to manage like all these thousands of people with like a short staff. And they had let my wife go from the church. She had been one of the original three members. It was her, Tim, and Brian, basically. And she was doing the job of like 10 people. She was local and global outreach. You mentioned she led your team to London. She was going like to London and Haiti and like doing all these things. And then she was the interim like music pastor, basically, because, you know, Brian had left and they were waiting for Sean to come in. And so she was carrying all this load. And they basically were like, they fired her, but in my mind, I was like, babe, like you need a break. Like, this is like, think of this as a sabbatical, or like, this is like, you know. And we were newly married at the time. Like, we had been married a year. So our first year of marriage was her doing local and global outreach and running the whole music ministry. And so like, I didn't really even have a wife our first year of marriage. So I'm like, this is great. Now we can hang out and we can like figure out what God wants us to do together. But she was like totally devastated. Like, she just was like, this was her dream job. I mean, it was just like God did so many amazing things, and she just got to be right in the middle of it. So for her, it just felt so hard. So it had been a really hard season, a really hard first year of marriage. So I was crying mostly because it just felt like it was so clear that God was speaking to me. And that's what felt so good. It's just that like my Father in heaven, like, yes, I was annoyed because I wanted to sleep, but he had something so much better, which is just a message for me. And it felt so clear. And so then he's like, and I don't want you to wait for this dinner. He's like, you need to tell Rebecca today. So, you know, at this point it's like 5 a.m. or something. So he's like, go on a walk and then come back and make your breakfast. So I went on a walk and kept praying and whatever, came back, made breakfast for her. And he was basically like, you don't need to manipulate this, Tom. Just, I'll take care of her. You tell her, whatever. So we ate breakfast, and then I basically said, hey, remember when I was telling you about our friends that are moving to the ranch and how I thought that would be a really cool idea? And you're like, yeah, but that's never going to happen. She's like, yeah. I'm like, well, last night when we went to dinner, I don't know if it was like the night before or whatever, like the last, when I went to dinner with Hunter, he asked if we would move up to the ranch, and she immediately starts crying. And I was like, wait, okay, is this good tears? Or are you like excited? It's like happening. But then like the way that she was crying, I was like, she doesn't seem happy, you know? And I'm like, what's going on? So I was like, so I let her, you know, I just sat there for a little while, and I was like, so what's going on? And she basically was like, said she couldn't talk about it right now. So I think we went on about our day, and I don't know if it was later that day or the next day that she was ready to talk. And she said, okay, so the reason I was crying was because I don't want to go to the ranch, but I felt clear in my spirit, God said, this is what I have for you. And she was like, but she didn't want it. So that was like sobering. And I expected like, okay, well, surely we'll get up there and she'll love it because this is what God has for us and it's going to be great. And then we got up there, and even like the first week, she's like, what are we doing here? I'm like, what do you mean? What are you asking me for? I don't know why we're here. This wasn't my idea. I love the idea, but we were up there for 2 years, and it was really hard for her. I mean, we both loved LA. We love reality. And we were just like out in the middle of nowhere. I was having a blast. I was collecting animals. I told before we left, you know, we were still in LA. I was like, hey, babe, I just want, I think God's going to give me a raccoon when we go up there. And she's like, what are you talking about? You're so crazy. And literally, Becca, I think it was the first day. I think the first day that we were there, we like get in, we're like unpacking. And Hunter calls me over. He's like, hey, come over to the mill real quick. So I ran over to that pellet mill. And I get there and I was like, he's gonna have a raccoon. And I got over there and they had a little baby raccoon in like a bucket or something. And I took it home. And the next day we got a dog and we I don't know, we had like all these cats and pigs and rabbits and I was having a blast. I just thought it was so fun and just acreage forever. I mean, just you could just drive all day, you know, on this land. So, another testimony for
you.
Wow.
Okay, so we're running out of time, but just tell people what you're doing now in terms of the ministry. Tell us what you're doing now.
Yeah, and that's another. We could talk for another several hours, but as always, but we were up at the ranch for a couple of years, and then God called us down here to the Central Coast of California. We live in San Luis County, in a town called Atascadero. And we've been a part of a church for about 7.5 years. A little over a year ago, Rebecca took her first music ministry job since Reality. So she's the music director here at our church now. We have 3 boys. The Lord led me into recruiting about 8 years ago, which was really interesting to me. I didn't think it was going to last this long, but I've been in it almost 8 years. Started my own agency 3 years ago, called Story Partners Recruiting. And God has just, he's really put this passion for story, on my heart and in my life. We started the same year that we started that agency, started a co-working space at our church called Story Labs, which is really about organic discipleship, where all kinds of people from all walks of life inside the church come together to work together. And then we've got architects and software engineers and marketing people and all kinds of people working in this space, but we're all Christians. So we're able to have like this organic discipleship where we don't have to create all these extra programs outside of our life. We've got like discipleship and biblical conversations and study just happening in our workspace, which is really fun. With some of the funds that came through recruiting, I built a testimony app called Story that has been live in Android and iPhones for over a year now. But I'm still kind of just waiting to see what God's going to do with that because it hasn't really, it feels like it's just kind of been in this holding pattern. We were able to launch it, but it's not really ready to serve the church yet. I think it needs a lot more. It needs a few more features to enable people to really be able to tell their story. So this year, fast forward to this year, and there's so many other details that I could include, that God gave me the word rest for this year, which has been really, really interesting. And it's kind of been an exploration in no. In saying no, that is, I love to say yes. I say yes to as many things as I can. I was serving in kids ministry, teaching Sunday school and volunteering. I was volunteering down at our coffee shop downstairs. I was doing testimony breakfast once a month, which I've actually done since 2009 down in LA. I was doing those. So gave me the ability to continue to do those. I did those at the ranch. I was doing those. And God just said, like, hey, step back from all that stuff, hand it off. So I've handed off all these things and taken a step back from all these things. And it's been really, really interesting. I didn't feel like those were very burdensome, like enjoyed everything that I was doing. In an attempt to be obedient, I was just trying to like step away from those. And I've just recognized there's so much more space in my heart. And it's been this, he gave me Ephesians 3:14 through 21, like to sort of step into the season, which says like, hey, Paul's saying, I want you to understand. I want you to have power and strength to understand the height, depth, width, length of God's love for you. Like, it's just like this, it's packed, that passage is packed with so much power and so much like strength analogy just for us to understand how much God loves us. And so it's kind of been this posture of it, Tom, if you don't lift a finger, if you're not doing a single thing for me in your life and in this season, like, I love you. And like, if all you do is play pickleball every day, like, I love you. So like, take a break from as much stuff as you possibly can and just, you know, and just be and just rest. And so I'm 3 months in and just still kind of figuring out exactly what that means. And it's definitely been saying no. I ended up firing my first person ever, which was really, really hard for me to do like a month ago or so. I didn't want to do it. I was like, hey, they could just work here. I'll just give them money. It doesn't matter. I don't care. And because everybody has got a story, you know? And so I just have this like very like benevolent sort of posture usually where I'm heavy on mercy, but I'm not really paying attention to justice. And so God's kind of like, you kind of need both. If people are either underperforming or it doesn't work out, yes, they have a story and yes, they have needs. Everybody has needs, but you need to trust me that I can provide for them, that I can give them a job. And if this job isn't something that they can, that they're excelling at, then you're hurting them by allowing them to stay, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I could talk for a lot longer on the exploration of no and just, it just feels, in a lot of ways, it feels antithetical to the gospel because there's all these, like, if they ask for your tunic, give them your cloak as well. And if they want you to go a mile, go 2 miles and just, like, give and benevolence and just be free. And so I think the personality God's given me, I gravitate towards all that language and all that narrative. But there are many other narratives also where it's like God said no. Jesus said no a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm called to the Jews, you know, and this is what I'm doing and this is where I'm going. And I'm not, you know, I know we just had a lot of ministry success here, but it's time to go. It's time to move on. We're going to go somewhere else, you know? And it's like, well, yeah. What about all those people, you know? And boundaries is something that I haven't always appreciated as it relates to the gospel, but I think, and yeah, I never read the book Boundaries and I know that it's important, but it's been a death to self in a lot of ways, just to draw boundaries and to say no, which feels weird. But I think it's important. So,
well, I'm glad you said yes to this conversation today.
Well, yeah, I mean, this feels so, yeah. And it's funny too, this morning I was like thinking, I didn't even think about that reality, you know, that this is that season of no. And cause I think it's just like, we're, you know, we've been friends for so long and, it's just like having a conversation with Beckett didn't feel like something I had to consider, like, should I do this or not? You know?
Good. I'm glad. Well, thank you, Tom, for sharing all of these stories and thank you for my Bible. And, thank you for coming on the show.
Oh my gosh, Beckett. It was such an honor, such a privilege. Hopefully I didn't ramble on too much, but I'm really, really grateful to testify to what God's done, you know?
All right. Well, guys, we will see you next week. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Beckett Cook Show. Your support makes this content possible. All episodes of The Beckett Cook Show are also available on YouTube. For more information about Beckett and his ministry, visit his website at beckettcook.com.
Thank you to the team at Life Audio for their partnership with us. If you go to lifeaudio.com, you will find more faith-centered podcasts about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
No matter what you're going through, you are not alone. Sis, if you've experienced pain in your father-daughter relationship, I want you to know that you are loved and seen. I'm Kia Stevens, host of the Hope for Women with Father Wounds podcast, and I created my show to help you exchange your father wounds for the love of God the Father. Join me for encouragement, wisdom, and scripture. Just search Hope for Women with Father Wounds on lifeaudio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.